This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 336. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
This is how you know, little flockers, that we love you. We're doing a show right now. And
the June show, like any show in June, is because we love you.
Absolutely, because I'm not sure exactly what there is to talk about. So if you're not into just the endless banter between me and Brandon, this might not be the show for you. I'm just saying that right now.
Oh, well, we have things to talk about. We can continue our Julio Jones discussion from the last show. I feel like so much has happened since our Julio Jones discussion that there's now a lot more to talk about. There's odds makers saying that the best, like the most likely landing spot is now the Seahawks, which is kind of wild. We can get into why that may or may not be accurate, but it's worth discussing. And, you know, the Seahawks, they started out with their organized team activities, OTAs. Now, there weren't any veterans there, although Akella Witherspoon, he's a veteran, not a veteran to the Seahawks, but his first year with the Seahawks, he was there. He had some comments for the media, and I thought we'd get into those too.
All right. I knew we were going to get into the Witherspoon stuff because you were excited to talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, on a scale of 1 to 10, like a -4?
Excited, not excited. Like, I was excited to bring it up as a potential show topic, but excited in terms of, that's the second thing I want to talk about. I want to talk Julio, Adam.
Okay, well, we could talk Julio. Aaron, I can sum this up for you real fast. It ain't happening, so.
But the thing that sparked this all off, well, in terms of the Seahawks, was Diana Rossini tweeting out, I guess the end of last month on May 30th, she said the Falcons continue to field calls from teams interested in trading for Julio Jones. The Seahawks have had discussions about a possible trade with Atlanta per sources. In fact, quarterback Russell Wilson and Julio Jones have spoken to discuss the possibility of playing together.
Oh, I have zero doubts that John Schneider has contacted the GM over there in Atlanta and been like, hey, so what are you guys asking for? What's going on? And I have zero doubt that Russ and Julio had a phone call where Russ was like, dude, if we can get this done, do you want to come play here? Would that be cool? And Julio was like, yeah, sure. Okay. I mean, if that's how that works out.
That's not a very enthusiastic Julio. I'm hoping Julio is more enthusiastic in his response to Russ when they spoke.
He seems like a pretty chill guy, so I'm going to go with probably not.
Okay.
And how excited is Julio going to be when he knows he's going to get traded in whatever team he gets traded to is going to ask him to take a pay cut?
I want to talk about that, too. I want to talk about how this all came together, because initially, before any of this past week, you and I were talking about this only because the rumor was out there that the Falcons were looking for a first-round pick in terms of compensation for Julio Jones. And this was before he went on, maybe knowingly or unknowingly, on to Undisputed with Skip and Shannon.
Well, that was knowingly. Give me a break. Shannon would never do that.
I will tell you exactly why that I think it was knowingly, based on a number of things that we heard. But I think, too, part of this all blew up because of what came out of that show and Julio's appearance on that show. And everybody is pointing to the fact that Julio said, I'm out of there, and linking it to Atlanta. But I wanted to go back and listen to this, because the way that Shannon set up this question, I'm curious if Julio was responding to the question that he thought he was responding to.
You watching Julio?
I really hope he answers here.
Julio, have the guts to pick up the phone.
What's happening?
Yeah.
All right.
Julio. Hold on. Let me put you on.
I got you. This is your favorite uncle. What's going on, bro?
Man, nothing much. Gotta go meet up with my brother. What's happening with you?
Man, look. You want to go to the Cowboys, Julio? Or you want to stay in Atlanta?
Oh, man. Nah, I'm out of there, man.
You out of there?
He's out of there.
Are you going to... Ideally, where would you like to go?
I want to win.
Okay. Well, don't go to Dallas. If you go to... You ain't winning in Dallas, Julio.
Man, listen, come on, man. You already know I know.
Okay.
Can you remind him we're on television?
Ask him why we wore the Dallas.
There's There's so much going on just in that one little clip. But the first thing I want to point out is that Shannon asks him two questions. He asks him, do you want to go to the Cowboys? And do you want to stay in Atlanta? And he says, I'm out of there, man. But you have to remember the context of why this was all taking place. It was because Julio Jones was in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He was training with the guys down there, and he was pictured in a Dallas Cowboys hoodie. And so I kind of wonder if he was responding to that first question that Shannon asked of, do you want to go to the Cowboys? And he's saying, no, I'm out of there, man. Like, I'm out of that area. I'm not sure if that's what he was responding to or the second part.
He was responding to the second part. And then when Shannon elaborated, you know, if you want to win, you're not going to go to Dallas. He's like, yeah, I know.
Well, that was my favorite part of it.
Yeah.
Other than at the end, Skip coming in and saying, ask him why he was wearing the hoodie.
So no.
And Julio, there was the other part where you heard Jen chime in and say, remind him that we're on TV. Now, this was the tell to me. Well, one of the many tells that this was set up, because she didn't say tell him we're on TV. She said remind him. So because it was set up, you're saying remind him that, you know, we're going live here.
OK. Also, and this is the easiest way to explain how this was no accidental thing, that like Shannon called up Julio and Julio got ambushed and said something on air when he didn't know he was on air. It's real simple. If you're the producer of that show.
Yeah, you set that
and
up.
And Shannon's like, I'm going to call up Julio right now. And you're like, no, no, you are not just going to call up Julio and not tell him that you're on the show. Like, that's her job. Like, she is going to lose her job if they put Julio on the show without disclosing he's on the show. She would never let that happen. You would never let that happen. You would butt in right at the beginning. Julio, you're on TV. Something. Like, you would, somebody would say something. And on top of all that, Shannon Sharp likes his job, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not going to lose his job over that. And then thirdly, do you think that if Shannon ambushed Julio like that, put him on the show without him knowing it, do you think any league source, any current player is going to trust Shannon Sharp ever again on anything?
No.
No. So there's a zillion reasons why you wouldn't do that. And he didn't do that. It's clear. It's clear that Julio's frustrated that a trade hasn't gone down yet. And so it was all being worked behind the scenes. And he got with Shannon. He's like, give me a call. I'll go on air. And I'll say, yep, I'm out of there, to force the Falcons' hands to actually get this done, because I'm tired of waiting around.
I'm willing to accept that. I don't know for sure. And so that's, and part of that was kind of the way that this closed, because he reiterated about not going to the Cowboys.
I'll talk to you later. Thanks for calling me back. We on air, but I appreciate you calling me, Dolph. You know, I know my nephew was going to pick up.
Oh yeah. Nah. I ain't going to Dallas, man. I never thought about going to Dallas.
So that's how he closed it. I knew I wasn't going to Dallas. So it seemed like that was the message that Julio wanted to get out there, because it was the response to the first question, and it was how he closed it at the end. And plus, Shannon said, thank you for calling me back, which wasn't it kind of weird how Shannon said, thanks for calling me back, even though Shannon was the one who made the phone call?
I don't know. A bunch of hinky stuff there. I don't think Julio's number one goal there was to let everybody know that he wasn't going to the Cowboys.
That's what he said twice. So that was where my thought went.
Because he was asked about it. That was why Skip wanted this whole thing to go down, right? He wanted to know if he was going to the Cowboys. And his thing was like, no, I'm out of Atlanta. No, I'm not going to Dallas. And like, you know, then they kind of, and then Skip tries to welcome, you're wearing the hoodie. And so at the end of it, he's like, yeah, I'm not going to Dallas.
Because he wants to win, obviously.
Yeah.
So that's what makes me think that obviously he's not going to the 49ers. He's not going to the Rams. If he wants to win, he's going to go to a contender like the Seahawks. And that's why the Seahawks are the betting favorite right now as far as Las Vegas goes.
Is that why? I can't understand how this is the betting favorite. Because number one, you already don't have a number one pick next year because of the Jamal Adams trade.
Yeah.
And it's reported. that the Falcons want a first and players for Julio Jones at this stage of his career. That's catfishing ridiculous. There's no effing way. There's no way. And then you start to see the reports trickle out. Well, they would take whatever a hard second is. Like that's what Peter King reported. They'll take a hard second. I don't know what a hard second round pick is. Is that like they give you one in the middle of the round so that it's really difficult to choose what player you'd want? I don't know. I don't know what a hard second is.
I think that means a second from a non-playoff team.
Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, if we're guessing, that's my only, because I mean, every second round pick's going to be a second round pick. It's yeah.
I don't know.
The only thing I can think of.
So, and then they're like, well, they already have a first round.
Unless, okay. You know what I think a hard second could mean is that they don't want a third that could become a second if it's based on playing time or that sort of thing.
Maybe that's what that means. That's a great guess. I have no idea. But then you get the report. Well, they already have a first round draft pick offer on the table.
Yeah, they don't.
Yeah, bullshit. They would have already consummated the deal and just post-dated it for after the June 1st deadline.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way that that's true. Then they're like, no, we'd settle for a hard second, which means they're not even getting that in offers.
Right.
So that brings you down to about a third, which is what my initial gut reaction was. And then when we talked about it, I was like, nah, maybe a fourth.
You said a fourth, yeah.
But a third or a fourth, okay, fine. And they pick up some of his salary. But I don't understand how the Seahawks could be the odds on favorite, because if they have to give up a second, that means for another year, they wouldn't have a first. And then they wouldn't have a second after they just had a year with three draft picks. There is no GM in the world that's going to do that. I'm sorry. They're not trading that away. And he's talking about that he wants a new deal when he's brought in on a trade. Like, that rumor's out there at 32 years old.
Right.
I don't think so.
Yeah, with a depressed salary cap, I don't think you're going to get... I mean, you might get a new deal in terms of having the deal restructured and getting some money up front.
Yeah.
And I think...
But there's not going to be any new money.
No, I don't think there would be any new money, especially if he came to Seattle the way that they do things. It would be... And I think that that's the way... One of the things that's bothered me over these last... Well, since this past week that we've heard the discussions about Julio... Is anyone out there saying that Julio to Seattle can't happen because of the salary cap? Because anyone who says that does not understand that the cap is voodoo magic. So in this case, it's not even hard for them to make that magic to happen. You can sign Jamal Adams long term. His cap hit can be reduced by doing that. You can bring Julio on and restructure his deal, give him his guaranteed salary for 2021 and spread that out over multiple years. And then just have the understanding of, hey, we're going to release you at the end of this year and you can be a free agent at the end of the year to try and get that final big payday as you go off into the sunset of your career. And to me, that's what makes the most sense in terms of how he would make that transition to Seattle, because they've made that agreement with players in the past of, okay, after a year, we're going to allow you to be a free agent. Then you can go make your money. You're still going to get your money that you were guaranteed for this year. It's just going to be, you know, we're going to do our cap voodoo magic to make it work for us.
Yep. And then you could also restructure Russ and Wags in there as well.
Oh, yeah. And that's not, so there's, I'm saying it could be done even without doing that. So, yeah, but it could absolutely, yeah. Salary cap is not an issue.
It's an issue. It's not impossible. I'd put it to you that way.
Okay.
You're still having to kick the can down the road a little bit here, right? By doing that.
Yeah.
It spread out cap hit and all that stuff. And then, you know, with dead money and stuff. But at the end of the day, you got to ask yourself a quick question. Are you willing to mortgage the next 2 years to try to win it all this year? Is that where you're at? And if you are, why is Julio Jones the right guy for that and not Gilmore in New England?
A corner makes more sense. Yes.
By a lot. By a lot, by 10 miles.
Is Gilmore available?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the rumor.
That would make more sense. Yes, we can talk about the things that make more sense for this team, because obviously they could still upgrade at center. They can upgrade on the interior of the defensive line, especially after losing Jaron Reed, and they can upgrade at corner. And those are probably the three bigger spots of need. Would they be the biggest spot of impact, though?
Corner would.
Yeah. Okay.
There's only one football to go around. Like, you bring in Julio and you still got Lockett and DK. And then also, too, you set back Eskridge in his development.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. It's his rookie season. He can take a year to develop behind those three.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm really glad we wasted a pick on a second round receiver instead of a center at that point.
Yeah.
If you're just going to go out and trade for Julio.
You didn't know that was on the table at the draft, but yeah. I mean,
I bet they did. Everybody's been talking about this for months.
Yeah, maybe not for the price, though. I think that the price, and that's why the Seahawks would want to stay in it, is because when it comes down to a level where they'd be willing to get in, you said a fourth, would they be willing to, a second, yes, it seems high. Would they be willing to give up a fourth and multiple players? Because you look at that Falcons defense, and they need dudes. Like, that Falcons defense is not good. Trading Cody Barton to the Falcons would upgrade their linebacker core. Trading any of the other defensive ends that the Seahawks have, because they have multiple, would upgrade the situation. I was looking at the Falcons roster. They have Barkevious Mingo, who is slated as a potential starter for the Falcons. That dude was barely a starter when he was, well, I don't even know if he started for Seattle when he was here.
If he did, it was a spot start. Yeah, he was washed by then.
Yeah, and that was, what, like 5 years ago?
Yes.
And they have Steven Means, who is one of their other defensive ends, and he's been around the league for a while and, you know, about the same level as Mingo.
Yeah, we all know that the Falcons defense is in shambles. There's no doubt about it.
Other than AJ Terrell, they have issues at corner. Kendall Sheffield, Fabian Moreau, which, I mean, I don't know if the Seahawks would be willing to trade any corners, but
no, you wouldn't be. So I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where I don't really want to trade any of the current players, I guess, unless it's a guy that you don't think is going to make the roster.
They have so much depth at defensive end. I could see them willing to part.
There's never enough depth at defensive end. Do not get rid of DNs.
Unless you have to, yeah.
Unless you have to. And you don't have to. Chasing after Julio.
Well, you could get rid of Cody Barton. You could sign KJ Wright and call that good.
That would work. That's fine. I honestly don't really need to see a Julio deal done. I would almost prefer that we didn't. But then again, I guess if he really can come in and perform for a year, which I think is about realistic, right? Just 1 year at that age with his body type. Okay, maybe. I mean, maybe that makes Russ happy and keeps that relationship going for the next 5 years. And if that's the case, then okay, well, maybe then you do it just to be like, yeah, look, Russ, we've been doing stuff.
I went back and looked at the Hall of Famers, you know, at this point in their career, in their early 30s, who were traded by their former team and then either went on to have success or maybe didn't have a whole lot of success. And I was surprised at how often it worked out more than it didn't.
Really?
Yeah. Who's a guy that comes to mind that was traded in their early 30s that was like projected to be a Hall of Famer when they were traded at that point in their career?
I don't know.
Okay.
Fine. I can be stumped. I don't care. I don't have any ego about it.
Well, the one guy that came to mind immediately was Tony Gonzalez, who was traded by the Chiefs to the Falcons. And he was just about to turn 32. The Chiefs were coming off a 2-14 season. It was kind of a surprise, really, that he got traded to the Falcons. They traded him for a second round pick. And then Gonzalez went on to have another excellent career with the Falcons, where I think he was Pro Bowl, a Pro Bowler in every season except for one, and even made All Pro one time with the Falcons.
Sure. Okay.
Now, the two that didn't work out so well, turns out that they were wide receivers, when Randy Moss was traded by the Patriots to the Vikings for a third round pick. He only played four games with the Vikings, and then he went to Tennessee for a lot less than that. Or he may have even been released from the Vikings. But that was like personality stuff. Antonio Brown traded by the Steelers to the Raiders for a third round pick and a fifth round pick. And Antonio was about to turn 31, and then he never played a snap for the Raiders. So, you know, that's another. And so these were the three pass catchers that I found. And the other two were personality related. Tony Gonzalez, man, he was always in such good shape, though. So in terms of injuries, I don't know if there were really injury concerns with Tony like there are with Julio and his hamstring.
No. And not only that, but Tony Gonzalez's game isn't predicated on speed like many of the receivers are, right? Like, you get older as a receiver, and there's a few guys that can keep their speed as they get later in their career. There's a few, but the majority of them, they don't.
Larry Fitzgerald, like, he slowed down, but he adjusted his game and could play without the type of speed that he had early on in his career.
Yeah, I suppose.
And the other players that I came across were mostly on the line. Willie Roaf was traded from the Saints to the Chiefs, had a good career, a good couple of years with the Chiefs after he was traded, and that was after he turned 32. I put Jason Taylor in there. He was about to turn 34. He didn't have a great season with Washington after he was traded because he got injured for like the first time in his career. Richard Seymour traded from the Patriots to the Raiders for a first-round pick, and the Trent Williams trade was the most recent one, going from the football team to the Niners.
Yeah, big guys in the trenches. If this were that sort of trade and the guy was 32 years old, if it was for a dude in the trenches, I wouldn't be sitting here being like, I don't really want to do this.
It's getting a little
bit. It's just a different type of, you could get old man strength as a lineman, right? And have a very long career late into your 30s. Just the perimeter players are not players that age well. It's just not the way it works.
I just keep going back to Larry Fitzgerald, who had...
Cool. He is the exception, not the rule. You can't point at like two or three exceptions and make that the rule.
But after he turned 32, he played six more seasons.
Yeah. Larry Fitzgerald, you're 100% right. One dude, Larry Fitzgerald. You're right. Who else? Larry Fitzgerald? Larry Fitzgerald. Was it? And then there was also Larry Fitzgerald.
What about Jerry Rice?
He was also the greatest to ever do it.
Okay, well, I came up with two of the greatest to ever do it. So, and Julio is one of the greatest to ever do it.
He is a Hall of Famer, no doubt. I can definitely say that. If he didn't make the Hall of Fame and like retired tomorrow and didn't make the Hall of Fame, I'd be stunned, right? I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah.
But he's not in the Jerry Rice, Larry Fitzgerald, Randy Moss conversation. He's like in the tier just right below that.
Your outstanding Hall of Fame tiers. So, well, Calvin Johnson, probably.
Yeah. But just think of the guys like Calvin Johnson, Dez, AJ Green.
I'm going to put Dez in there.
Dez fell off at the end of his career. Oh, he was awesome. And then he wasn't. Like, you're looking at a lot of these guys who are, they get to that mid to, you know, 32, 33 years old, 30, and they just fall off a cliff, man. That is the norm. And on top of all of that, we discussed this on the last podcast, you're all in with Matt Ryan. You drafted a tight end and passed up on quarterbacks to go for it now and try to extend the window of Matt Ryan. And you're going to get rid of a highly productive player in his prime in Julio Jones?
Unless they could maybe trade for some pieces on defense that actually allow them to field a defense that could be average.
You can build a defense a lot of different ways too.
I'm
just saying, if he was still that dude,
you don't
if
get
he was
rid of
still
him.
That dude, you would not be trading him.
Right.
For the money.
But you think that he's going to be traded.
Yeah, he'll definitely be traded. But it ain't going to be for... If it's for a second, I'll be stunned. A soft second.
I think it'll at least be a soft second.
I think it's going to be a third.
And maybe some players thrown in.
Maybe.
That makes sense. Of the other teams that are up there in terms of betting favorites... You have the Titans, the Eagles, Ravens, and 49ers are tied. And then you have the Patriots.
Yeah. I don't think if you're the Patriots, you're doing that right now. I don't see any reason to do that. I mean, we all know that Cam Newton's going to start, what, four games?
Before Mac Jones inevitably comes in.
Yeah.
It feels like a rebuild, right?
Yeah, that's a rebuild. That ain't happening. The Ravens, that's a possibility. I could see that. As well as the Titans, both out of conference, I think is a big deal.
And teams that are set to make the playoffs this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Lamar Jackson was an MVP 2 years ago.
49ers doesn't make much sense to me.
I don't know why that doesn't make sense to you. That makes all the sense.
Well, they have Kittle, they have Debo, they have Brandon Ayuk. They already gave up a first and a third to the Dolphins to trade up for Trey Lance. I mean, the only way I could see it making sense is if they're banking on Julio and all of that receiving crew to make Jimmy G look good for one last season to up his trade value after this year.
Yeah, I think if you're the 49ers, this is your thought process. We got to a Super Bowl with Jimmy G. And last year, obviously, the wheels on the bus just fell off because of injuries. We get that defensive line back intact. They play better. We've run Jimmy G out there again. Give Trey Lance, who needs some time to sit and learn. And let's surround Jimmy G with another weapon and try to make another run at a Super Bowl, Jimmy G. And then, just like you said, it ups his value. And away you go.
So you're not concerned about them stunting the growth of Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk by bringing in Julio, like you are with Eskridge being on Seattle?
I'm not an Ayuk guy.
Hmm.
So, I mean, that's just a clear upgrade. And not only that, but Ayuk and Debo are very similar in their skill set, right? They're very repetitive as players out there. Julio gives you something different.
Yeah, I think Ayuk's more of a downfield guy than Debo.
And they have the cap space.
Do they?
Yeah.
See, I was thinking that getting rid of Jimmy allows them to have the cap space.
No, I think they do. They do have the cap space. I think it's like $20 million. Jimmy's contract isn't that big.
I mean, it's kind of big for a backup quarterback. He's got a cap hit of $26 million this year.
Well, yeah, for a backup it is, but in starting quarterback.
Yeah, I guess they have $17 million of cap space when you look at the top 51.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can make that work.
And Kyle Shanahan is very familiar with Julio.
Yes, he is, after being the offensive coordinator there.
So that place actually does make sense, and they have the draft capital to trade if it's not a first, right?
Well, again, they traded a first and a third, so they do have a second. And that's what I think that it would be with the idea of, can we make Jimmy G look good enough to then maybe get a first and a second after this season to trade him to where, and then they can recoup those picks through making him look good this year.
Or even one of those picks, right? And then you see it as kind of a wash.
It's a risk, though, because Jimmy G could get hurt, you know, 2 weeks into the season.
That's why they drafted Trey Lance.
They also have to worry about paying Fred Warner.
They'll do that at some point.
I would think that they'd want to get that locked up sooner than later.
Well, we'll see what happens with that. I mean, you never know. I mean, Warner might want to test the market.
Maybe.
But you can say for sure the Rams are out. I mean, they've traded away, what, 17 drafts?
Yeah.
Into the future. Like, I don't think they have another pick until like 2038.
Yeah. And I think they've already come out and said that they're out.
And the Cards, I think they're in cap hell. And they just traded for Hopkins.
Yeah. They've got Hopkins, Green, Kirk, and Rondale Moore, who they drafted in the second round ahead of Eskridge.
There you go. And if Julio wants to win, he's definitely not going to the desert.
I don't think Hopkins would be a guy who would want to share the ball with Julio, whereas I could see Tyler and DK being guys who wouldn't really care about that. And in terms of timing, I feel like this works out really well because Tyler just got paid, so it's not like he's going to be in any... if his touches go down 20%, you know, it's not the end of the world for him. DK... Yeah, it could impact him in terms of the touches that he gets, but where he's at in his career, I don't think the Seahawks are going to want to limit that. And I think he would like to play with Julio. And he's going to end up being a top of the market guy as soon as he's up to get paid anyway. And that's after this season that they can even think about paying him. So he still has 2 years left on his rookie deal. I feel like if they're going to make it work, that everything kind of falls into place in terms of how the two top guys are sitting right now in Seattle.
I think in terms of fitting into a wide receiver room and the situation, you're 100% correct. The Seahawks do look like maybe the best fit. Although, you know, you could argue the Titans too, right? I mean, they lost a bunch of pass catchers in free agency.
Losing Corey Davis was huge.
Yeah, and so you team up Julio with Brown, and you've got that run game to open things up downfield. And, you know, maybe Tannehill can put together another good season somehow. And away you go.
If they make that deal, I hope they do it after week two.
Yeah.
I don't want Julio and AJ Brown for the home opener for the Seahawks.
I would prefer not to see that. But then again, even if it did, it doesn't have me quaking in my boots.
Well, from what I heard from Akella Witherspoon, I don't know if I'm quaking in my boots if I'm opposing wide receivers facing the Seahawks.
You said you had some feelings about this, and I have not listened to any of it. And I'm curious as to exactly where this comes from.
I wasn't super high on the move just based off his history in San Fran, just because he never really able to get healthy. Yes, he fits that mold of corner of you know, he looks like Richard Sherman style corner, although I think in the run game I have concerns there too. But just in terms of his first interview with the media, I don't know if he came across all that great. And I'm going to ask people who are listening to this at more than one time speed to slow it down to one time speed, because it changes the way a person sounds when you speed up their voice. Like they can sound like, you can go from being someone who sounds enthusiastic at, you know, 1.6 speed or 2x speed to sounding like you don't have so much energy.
Growing up, just watching Sherm, watching Cam, Earl, Shed, Browner, just that energy that they brought to the game, and just understanding that it's not only about being talented, but bringing passion and bringing energy and inspiring the men around you. And I think that group did it better than any. And that's one of the reasons I was so interested in coming to Seattle out of college.
It's about bringing passion and energy and that spirit to the people around you, Adam.
You know, it's funny. You had talked about this, and so I was ready to hear something that was like, oh, wow, like that's really bad. And honestly, that sounded like player speak. It just sounded like a normal player. He sounds like an athlete.
I've been listening to guys like DJ Reed, Richard Sherman over the years, even listening to Trey Brown in his press conference. When I listen to corners, especially, I expect guys with that mentality of, I'm going to crush the person who's lined up across from me.
You can have that without being a bombastic person. I mean, not every corner has to be Dion.
And I don't expect that either. And I point to someone like Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas, you know, when they were speaking, they didn't, but they had an intensity about them too. And so, I didn't feel that intensity either.
Earl had that intensity with the media. Cam did not. Cam had intensity on the field. That was very different.
Yeah. I could still feel a difference in terms of how they came across.
If you say so. If you can't feel the heat right now, and it's just it's a problem for you. Okay, I mean, I guess this is my thought on the player. I mean, he was so in San Francisco. He'll probably be so here, and we've got a lot to work to do at corner. And I'm hoping Trey Brown is the guy who really steps forward and actually starts.
Well, and here's the other thing. He went to the rivalry that the Seahawks have, and I didn't really like how he approached this either, because they asked whether or not he was excited to come to Seattle just based on his familiarity with the other opponents, you know, facing divisional opponents throughout the year.
Absolutely. I mean, playing teams that I've seen two times a year for the last 4 years is extremely convenient, as well as staying on the West Coast for my family. And then lastly, playing against the 49ers to fulfill y'all's idea of a rivalry or whatever. So it's fun and it's all competitive and I'm excited to be a part of it.
Idea of a rivalry or whatever. Thanks, Akello.
I don't think that's him like writing off the Seahawks thinking that they're rivals of the Niners, right? I think that's him saying more, yeah, all of you guys seem to think these rivalries exist between these teams and they just don't.
I took it that way too, and I don't like that.
Oh, okay. Well, I think there are some rivalries that make a difference, and I think there's a lot that are manufactured by the media, for sure.
And I want my players to believe in that rivalry and live up to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like DJ Reed. I feel like he has a rival, like a vendetta against San Francisco for releasing him. And why doesn't Akello have that too for them not taking him into his second contract?
And Sherm definitely had a vendetta for Harbaugh, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I felt like he carried it over in back to Seattle for releasing him.
Yeah, for sure. Again, I mean, he started that out with, you know, absolutely. And it was, there was energy in that. It wasn't just, yeah, well, absolutely.
I don't know. I feel like you have to see body language too.
Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. I guess I'm having a hard time finding big feelings about this one way or the other.
Well, yeah, apparently his dad has big feelings. And Michael Sean Dugar asked him about how his dad tells him that he sucks all the time.
Does your dad tell you that you suck before every game as a mean motivation?
Nah, I mean, it's more like after good games, honestly, good practices. Whenever I tell him something good from the day or after a good game, it's just like a humble reminder to stay diligent, stay grounded. And that's something that he's always been consistent on growing up, always been my coach in all three of my sports that I played growing up. So it's just kind of our deal. It's like no one really cares about what you do well. Just do better. And I think when you have that mindset, it just continues to push you to strive to be better, better person, better player.
Yeah, we've heard that story before in the NFL. I mean, Barry Sanders' dad would tell him all the time, you know, you're not even my favorite running back. That was Walter Payton.
Yeah.
That's a parenting technique. For example, a long time, and we still do it now, when I was dropping Isabel off at school, especially in middle school and stuff, where she could be embarrassed a little more easily, right? Instead of, hey, kid, love you, you know, have a good day. It was, hey, kid, I don't like you very much. And then she'd turn around and be like, I don't like you either. And a lot of the other parents would look in horror. But it was just, you know, it's like as you wish in The Princess Bride, right?
Right.
Instead of saying I love you, it was as you wish.
Well, then I'm just going to go with Akello's dad and say that I think Akello sucks.
Maybe it'll make it so that it keeps perspective for him and he plays even better. Good job, Brandon.
Just doing my part to motivate my team.
For a backup corner. Good job.
Is KJ Wright at least going to be our backup linebacker? Like, what's going on? Why is KJ not signed to this team yet?
How is KJ not signed anywhere?
Yeah, that too. Although, oh my gosh, did you see somebody from ESPN put the Rams as their odds-on favorite to sign KJ and that he would sign with the Rams for a $2.5 million contract?
So he wouldn't give Seattle a hometown discount, but he'd give LA one?
Right.
Sure. All right. That was from NFL Network?
I think it was ESPN.
Oh, okay. I kind of wished it was from NFL Network because that would also add to the conspiracy of the, you know, the Rams have to work in LA.
If he were to agree to $2.5 million, the Seahawks would have to match that.
Oh, yeah.
Like they would give him more than that.
I would think. I mean, he's still a productive player.
What number do you put on it that if he goes somewhere else for this amount, you're pissed at the Seahawks for not matching that deal?
What does Wags make a year?
Oh, like 15?
Yeah.
KJ's never made.
If he left and signed somewhere else for under 5,
I think that's a good number. I think that's a good number.
But I also think KJ's a very smart guy. I think he's got a number in mind. somebody's not going to pay me at least nine or whatever it is, right? Then I'm just not going to play. Screw it.
And you know what? That might actually work out better for Seattle, because in case there's any kind of injury issues, then you know you have him on standby to call up and say, okay, so-and-so went down. We need you. Yes, this is what, you know, we can get close to what you're asking for now.
Right. And you can find a way to make the money work.
Because it sounds like with Daryl Taylor working out at the strong side linebacker spot at rookie minicamp, and we were talking about the number of players on the defensive line, and obviously you want to develop Jordan Brooks.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you draft a guy that high, I mean, it's not for him to just ride the pine unless you're Rashad Penny.
I did see that NFL.com came out with their starting 22 players for each NFL team.
Oh, okay. Well, that's it's almost like doing a mock draft right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you don't know who's going to be on the team.
Right.
I think you have a pretty good idea. There will be some movement, because
if they don't have Aaron Rodgers as the starter for the Broncos, then this whole exercise is ridiculous.
He's still on the Packers roster. You can't just make up rosters because you think that that's the most likely place
that's
for a guy.
That's exactly what this exercise is.
Well, then why isn't Julio in the third spot for receiver on the Seahawks roster?
Exactly. That's why this exercise is ridiculous.
Well, I'll tell you who Greg Rosenthal has for the Seahawks, for the starting 22.
Okay.
He's got Russ, Carson, you got Metcalf, Lockett, Eskridge, Everett as the tight end, and then for the offensive line, Dwayne Brown, Damian Lewis, Ethan Posick, Gabe Jackson, Brandon Shell.
Woo! You know that Rosenthal, I mean, that's just, it's so mind-blowing, that starting 11 right there. I mean, how did he ever come up with that?
I'm at least happy that he had the research to know that Damian Lewis, you know, is going to be moving over to the left side, with, you know, Pete saying that Gabe Jackson's going to stay on the right side.
You know, actually do give him credit for that. You're right.
Because some people get that wrong, especially national guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, give him credit for that. You're right. Maybe my sarcasm was a little misplaced for Greg.
Okay. On defense.
Nope, I take it back. Yeah, it was pretty much totally, completely
it's properly pretty chalk. Placed. Yeah, as far as who you'd expect. Yeah. Mm-hmm. On the defensive side, Carlos Dunlap, Puna Ford, Al Woods in the middle. The other defensive end spot, who do you put as the other starting defensive end opposite Carlos Dunlap right now?
Oh, probably Hyder.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot of choices. Rosenthal has.
Yeah, I picked one.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's a good pick. LJ Collier is who he had.
Sure. You could go there too.
And Collier, Hyder, Mayoa, Rasheem Green, you could probably put there.
Yeah. Make an argument for that. You bet.
And maybe you just went with Collier because former first round pick.
Sure. Again, can't really argue.
No. You have four different guys you can choose from.
Yeah, and that's the whole point, is they're going to rotate these guys. I don't know that it matters who starts or not. They're all going to play pretty equal minutes. I mean, the idea is to rotate all those dudes in so that they're fresh, so that a guy who is maybe a B player, when it gets down to the end of the game and it's the fourth quarter and you're trying to pin your ears back and go back and get that quarterback, is going against an offensive lineman who might be an A player, but he's gassed because it's the fourth quarter and you're fresh. Coming in as a B player, now you're an A player.
Bobby Wagner, Jordan Brooks at the linebacker spots. We're going nickel defense here, so we got three corners: DJ Reed, Akella Witherspoon, Ugo Amadi, and Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs at safety.
Okay.
And for corner, okay, Akella Witherspoon will be there for maybe the first four games, and then Trey Brown will take over.
Why am I totally blanking on the young safety's name that got hurt last year? Blair.
Yeah, Marquise Blair.
Marquise Blair. I could see him in the slot as well.
Yeah, not over Ugo, though.
You don't know that?
Yeah, Ugo's my guy. And we're going small guys at corner this year. It's going to blow everybody's mind. It's going to be Trey Brown, Ugo Amadi, DJ Reed, and they're going to tear it up.
Okay. I mean, that might happen.
Or they could trade for Stephon Gilmore. I'd be okay with that.
That would be great. I'd be very excited about such things.
And then they could package. So once they make the trade for Stephon Gilmore, then right. they can package Witherspoon and Cody Barton in a trade for Julio Jones. And they get both those guys.
And that would completely piss off all seven of the Atlanta Falcon fans.
And then they go and get Geno Atkins, who's still out there and available to play defensive tackle.
There we go. That'd be cool.
Get all the old guys.
And then it would blow up Greg Rosenthal's, you know, 22-man roster predictions right there.
It's going to be pissed.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
That's what he gets for doing it early.
Yeah, well, you know what? What else is he going to write about in June?
I don't know. I mean, I could sit here and talk about all sorts of other things other than the prediction of a roster when all the guys aren't even on the roster yet.
You could talk about how you got some bees up at the cabin.
Shoot, I could talk to you about how just in the last 10 minutes, I got meme bugged again by Bruce, the hummingbird. I've named him Bruce because he started coming around last year and he just like come up to one window and just like meme mug you.
Yeah.
You're like, where's my food? And then he'll go to the other window, like around the corner, and just sit and like just lock eyes on you, just stare at you, just give me my food. We finally got the feeder up yesterday. And so Bruce came by and he just, while we were recording, but he wasn't angry about it. He was more just like, cool, thanks for the food.
Yeah, about time.
Yeah, it was about, seriously, it was like, about time, peace out.
Catfish!
And he was gone.
See, my old cat will do the same thing to me. If I haven't fed her, she will come and just sit and stare like she's trying to burn a hole like into your brain. That it is time for me to be fed. And how are you not understanding me right now with me looking at you this long and intensely?
Absolutely. The only thing you're missing is that Bruce is really loud with his wings, man. Just you hear it from inside the house. Like him just like at the window.
Even over the fridge?
Even over the fridge. Yeah, you know Bruce is there. There's no doubt.
All right. Well, we're getting into second half of show stuff. Why don't we get to the second half of the show?
All right, sounds about right.
All right, well, we started a little bit early on the second half, but now it's official. We're into the second half of the show. And one more Seahawks topic before we get to welcoming some new members of the flock. Russell Wilson, this past week, he tweeted out his support for Naomi Osaka. And I don't know if you caught any of this news, or anybody else listening, Naomi Osaka, she's one of the top tennis players in the world right now. She skipped a post-match press conference. I know. It's a pretty big deal, apparently. There were people up in arms about, and this is tennis.
Yeah. Oh, my catfish king stars.
I've watched tennis, and I can say in my 40-plus years on this planet, I have never watched a post-match tennis press conference.
I think I watched one when Nadal and Federer had that epic match in the French Open a number of years back. And I definitely watched an Agassi one way back in the day. Yeah, the only time, or McEnroe was fantastic. I think that's the only time that you really care to see a tennis player come up and have a press conference is if they melted down at a ref or broke a racket.
Right.
Otherwise, it's like, yeah, I hit the ball back the other way until they stopped hitting it back. And I did that more than them. And so now I'm on to the next round.
So, yeah, I was happy to see Russell voice his support on this. I don't see what the big deal is. And I suppose it's media generated because they're the ones that want to speak with the athletes after a match. But I mean,
if she doesn't want to talk, she doesn't have to talk. She's a free person.
Well, we went through this with Marshawn for so many years.
This is exactly it. And that's why I was going to say, instead of having Russ in her corner, she needs to give Marshawn a call and he can coach her through this. I mean, honestly, it would have been hilarious if she would have just kept going to the press conferences and just gone straight, I'm just here so I don't get fined. I would have fell off my chair. And then it would have proved her point. It would have been great.
Or even just, I appreciate you.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We just go with the yes.
And my least favorite argument that I hear from media people is saying, well, it's part of the business. It's part of it's part of their obligation as an athlete. They have to do this, or else, you know, some of these reporters aren't going to get their stories. But you're telling me that there's reporters out there that haven't developed relationships well enough with athletes that they can still get a quote for their story?
And they're going to get the good quotes from a press conference? That almost never happens.
Almost never.
And then on top of that, tennis is a unique sport. It's much like golf. Is Osaka, is she employed by a team?
No.
Is she employed by anybody?
There's probably some kind of contractual relationship with the Professional Tennis Association or whatever it is, right? I don't know enough about tennis.
No, maybe, but the way I see it, she's an independent contractor that comes and plays at these events, and is her only boss is her. There's no GM. There's no owner of the team. Like, she's not under contract with, you know, a sports or you know, an organization like a team. It's ridiculous.
And the other thing that we haven't even brought up, it's not like she was skipping it because she didn't want to. She actually said that this is a mental health issue and that was her reason. And I don't think it's right for people to say, well, she's just saying that because she really doesn't want to. That's kind of a jerk take to have.
I think there's a 50-50 likelihood that it's a legit mental health issue or she's just saying that.
Then just say, well, I don't want to do it. Then if you're not going to do it, that I think that's a good enough reason as it is. Why sure. Even bring it up? The
absolutely.
I just did it because I didn't want to.
I guess that was my point by saying that. Like, I don't really give a shit if it is a mental health issue or she just doesn't want to do it. I don't really care. She doesn't have to talk to all y'all if she doesn't want to. And on top of all that, I'm sorry that the world has evolved and all these athletes and politicians and everybody can circumvent the whole media through social media and talk directly to their fans so you don't get the scoop and you don't get to be the middleman and the keeper of the information anymore. And I know that pisses you off, reporters, but that's called evolution. You are going the way of the dinosaurs. Good luck with that.
Well, and you can still answer questions that way too. And reporters can still write their stories based off of tweets.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, I feel like we've seen plenty of that.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're not putting anybody out of work by skipping a press conference is my other point.
No, definitely not. You're just letting everybody go home a little earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a fan. Good job, Naomi.
Yeah, I was happy with Naomi too, and happy with Russ for giving support.
Absolutely.
Well, speaking of support, how about welcoming some new members of the flock with their support for our show?
I'm game and still surprised. It's June.
It is June, and we especially appreciate those of you who are supporting us in June and coming in with new donations and starting off with Jason Harding, who came in with $141.63. Welcome to the flock to Jason.
Dude, Jason, that's a baller donation right there.
I know. Jason sent in a note, said, okay, so I finally made a donation. It's probably about time. Love your show, but until you guys put your mugs up on the screen, you are still Dante and Randall to me. Thank you for all your hard work. Go Hawks.
All right. I don't understand the reference, but I do agree if we want a better YouTube traction, because I've been noticing there's a lot more Seahawks content, guys, on the YouTubes here in the last like 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll probably have to put our mugs on the screen, which means it's not going to be, the show won't be edited, you know, like they'll get to see the flubs and all.
It's fine.
Is it? Is it, Brandon?
Yeah, I could live with that.
Can you?
Maybe.
Are we sure?
No, I'm not sure.
Okay, because I think we could. I know I can.
Well, Jason, he did want to note his support for the Hobo Shack. He says, if you see a painted Aerosmith flag by the side of the road that says 15 miles to the Hobo Shack. Hobo Shack, yeah. I think that's a Love Shack reference.
Yeah. Hobo Shack, baby. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going any further with that. I know you were hoping that I
wasn't sure if you were waiting for me to chime in or if you were going to continue with it.
Yeah, well, you left me hanging, so thanks. And, now Jason doesn't get his full little serenade there.
I can't believe you don't get the Dante and Randall reference. Have you not seen Clerks?
Last time I saw Clerks, I was like 13 years old or whatever.
Yeah, it was high school.
Yeah.
If you were my friend in high school, you probably watched Clerks with me because that was...
Oh, I know I did.
Yeah, okay.
I've watched the movie. Yeah. I don't remember the characters' names. I don't, you know, I mean, Jay and Silent Bob, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's what I know about Clerks.
See, I started listening to a brand new podcast here just this week. It's called Screen Run. And they're going for the first season of this podcast, they're going and doing all of the Kevin Smith directed movies in a row.
Hmm. So, he's got some doozies out there.
Yeah, he front loaded his career for sure with doozies.
Okay. Yeah, that might be true. That might be true. Does he suffer from the same thing that the lead singer of Blues Traveler suffers from? Whereas, like, when they're fat, they're really good at their job. And then when they get skinny, they kind of suck.
I don't know if it was that. I think that he...
Are we sure? Because it feels like it's that.
We'll go with that. Why not?
Okay. There's another high school era reference right there. Blues Traveler.
You don't think they're still relevant anymore?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say no.
No? Okay.
I mean, maybe they are.
I still enjoy some Blues Traveler.
Sure. It was the first CD I ever bought in my life.
Really?
Yeah.
Mine was, I think mine was Pearl Jam's 10.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
You moody Gen Xer.
The only Pearl Jam, well, I like some Pearl Jam. It's my favorite Pearl Jam album, I'll say that.
There you go.
Malcolm Colley came in at $36 for the year via Patreon, getintheflock.com. And Malcolm says, thanks for all the work and opinions you bring to our Seahawks fandom. I am a Seattle area ferry commuter and love the days when A, we see some orcas, and or B, there is a new Seahawkers pod. I'll be at the Titans game. So if we do a pod meetup, I'll be in. From Malcolm.
Nice. Well, then come to Houston as well, Malcolm. You can take a ferry.
Yeah. Well, we should just...
You got to go down, you know, around the Cape of Good Hope and all that, I guess, right? Isn't that it?
It's a little bit of a trip. Well, yeah. You would cut through the Panama.
If they let you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's a long ways to go around the tip of South America.
I just worry about Malcolm traveling on those ferries. I do. I've done it a couple times. And I mean, you see on the news, like when people die on the ocean these days, it's usually not from like a cruise liner going down or something like that. It's almost always a ferry.
It's in the Puget Sound, though. You're not going to be that far from land.
It's far enough. And it's all that, you know, deadly salt water. Nah, it's death out there. Be careful, Malcolm. Wear a life vest.
I always like seeing orcas out in the sound. I did my first kayak trip that I did in the Puget Sound. We had orcas go right under our kayaks. It was both fascinating and really scary.
That would be freaking terrifying. You went out into the Puget Sound and basically a glorified pop bottle, like a tiny piece of plastic.
The reason why it was scary, but also somewhat comforting, is that we went as a group. It was a... you know, what do you call it when you have like a guide?
A guided tour.
It was a guided kayak trip.
Yeah.
And he could see the kayak, or he could see the orcas coming. And he's like, okay, we got to group together so that way it can see us. And so, none of us get run over. And so we all had to scrunch together our kayaks. And they literally came out of the water 5 feet from the distance of our kayaks.
I'm really happy for you, and that sounds cool, but also...
catfish!
No, never. Not in a million years.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Nobody died, so it was good.
Yeah, that time. I just want Malcolm to be careful out there.
Be careful out there. And if you go on a kayak trip out in the Sound, go with a group, just in case.
Yeah, and don't take me.
Not into it.
No, I'm good. I'm out.
One of the things that our guide said when we went to is that he referred to kayaks, especially two-person kayaks, as like...
Scooby snacks?
No, it was like almost like divorce fuel.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. The one time I have done this, I was dating a gal, Kristen, at the time, and we did it in San Diego. And nothing scary happened, which was nice. We saw some dolphins in the distance at work.
Yeah.
But they made a similar joke about how that's a relationship ender. Turned out it had nothing to do with the kayak, just her cheating. Like, that was the big part.
Well, you know, this was, gosh, how many years ago for us? And we're still going, so we're good.
Yeah, exactly.
We made it
so
through.
It's a bad joke.
We did the kayak test, and our relationship survived.
Yeah, exactly.
So going back to the Titans game, I am going to get a set of group tickets. I've already got it ordered. I just need to put it out to the flock, and this is going to be exclusively first for our members of the flock, probably exclusively first for our Ring of Honor members.
Yeah.
And so if they want to attend the Seahawks game, we'll put the information out there, and they're going to be way cheaper to get them through the podcast than it is through Ticketmaster. So if you're thinking about it, definitely, if you're in the flock, there's going to be a way to get in on it and meet us up at the Titans game.
Yeah, which would be sweet. So what are we going to do about our season tickets? Like, who's sitting in those seats?
Oh, that's a good question. Because, we have our two really nice season ticket seats.
Yeah, I know.
And then we'll have our...
And the last time we were at the Clink, I didn't sit in those seats, Bloomy. And I got dumped on the entire time.
That's right. The weather should be better. And I think... Oh, no, I don't think we're undercover this time either. We might be close to being undercover. I'll have to look at the seats.
Well, that
again.
Doesn't count. Being close to undercover doesn't work at games in the weather or as an officer. Yeah, being close to undercover doesn't
work.
Well,
this is September. Last time was October, and I feel like that's always more dangerous at a Seahawks game.
That's probably a true fact.
Yeah. Maybe if somebody's coming in from out of town, like, and they want really good seats, maybe it'll...
Out of country. If you make it from another country.
And not Canada. Like, people coming down from Victoria, that doesn't
count. No, Canada is just more Montana, okay? Like, we all know that's what it is. So, yeah, that doesn't count. Yeah, you have to come across an ocean.
I think that sounds about right. We'll figure it out.
Exactly.
And yes, Texans game, 12-12. That's the other one that we're shooting for.
Right.
And Aaron Fisher did some legwork for us on figuring out... some of the logistics that we're going to have to get out there soon. But it was great when we did the drawing before the show today for tiny pieces of Seahawks stuff for May. Turns out Aaron Fisher won that prize. And I actually did it randomly. I did the whole Siri thing, random pick.
Mm-hmm.
It was Aaron Sosi. The Hakra was with Aaron for this drawing.
Absolutely. The Hakra's strong with that one.
And so tiny pieces of Seahawks stuff for June then, Adam. Yeah. I think we're doing mini helmet.
Ooh,
yeah.
That's a not so tiny piece of Seahawks stuff. No,
but it's tinier than a regular helmet.
Yeah, in comparison, if you were to wear that helmet, you'd be a very tiny person.
And it's a signed Kristen Michael Seahawks helmet.
Yeah.
Well, he was number 33. We just did episode 333. We're in the 330 number series of the shows. So I thought, hey, Kristen Michael, 33. It fits in with this month's theme.
Absolutely. Is he still alive?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
What do you mean, is he still alive? Hey, is Jared still alive?
Yeah. Yeah. He got the vid and he's still alive.
Okay. Well, that's good. I hadn't heard a follow-up since we were kind of... You know.
That circle of friends, the no news is good news, definitely is the mantra.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Jared's doing all right.
Yeah.
And Kristen Michael's a free agent. So, hey, maybe he'll be back on the Seahawks.
I can't. Probably not. He probably still carries the ball in one hand all the time, forever.
Yeah, it could be.
I don't even think he uses two hands on a steering wheel. I bet you he's just right hand only.
Oh, yeah.
At all times, no matter what.
Well, I mean, that would only make sense. All right. Well, good transition from this. Team Streamlined Banter versus Team Squirrel. The votes are in.
They are.
Because Andrew sent us an email that we read on the last show. It was good constructive criticism. He was really nice about saying that the shows were getting a little bit too long.
Yeah, I'm not mad at him for a second.
And so we put it up to a vote. We said, you know, send, put your money where your mouth is, people, and send us to via Venmo at Hakra. And so Daniel, he came in with $5 and sent a series of squirrel emojis. So I'm guessing that he's Team Squirrel.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark sent $1 and said, do not cut out the banter.
There you go.
And that was it. So Andrew had his chance. He could have won this vote with more than $6. And he didn't even come in. We didn't hear from Andrew.
The market has spoken. They want us to talk more.
We did get an email from Kevin, said, hi, keep the longer episodes coming. Banter or bants, as we say here, is a must. Sorry to do this to you guys and the legend that is Hong Kong Hawk, but you are all wrong. It's pronounced Jaguars, not Jaguars or Jagwires. No opinion on the whole Nevada-Colorado thing, other than Raiders and Broncos suck. Go Hawks, from Kev.
Well, at least Kevin's dead right about that, right? The Raiders and Broncos part. I definitely was accosted more for my pronunciation of spotted cats down south, like by other people in my life now. So thanks a lot to Dave for that.
Yeah, he put you on blast and now you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, whatever. I'm still looking forward to the week that we play the Jaguars. So
I think you're probably going to emphasize it even more now. This is what you get, Dave.
Yeah, you did this to you.
Mike from Seattle comes in, says, last episode 335, a Steven called the podcast out to do better and, quote, tighten up your banter, unquote, to make a shorter podcast. As if at this time in the off season, there's anything real to talk about other than banter. There's three things that are talked about right now. One, way too early power rankings that always favor last year's Super Bowl champions. Two, a friggin' schedule of when you can buy some game tickets. And three, Pete regurgitating overly optimistic platitudes about the new guys, quote unquote, competing their butts off, even though it's just guys running around in gym clothes, half of whom won't be on the team in a few months' time. There you go. 2 minutes of streamlined content. No filler. Thankfully, Adam finding new or even frivolous ways of ranting about how much the Rams, Niners, or Cardinals are trash is basically plug-and-play entertainment. If I could have it playing in the background all day as I work, so does Steven. Do better.
I love it. Yeah, for sure, man. The only thing that he left out of that is all the reports on who's 5 pounds heavier and who's 5 pounds lighter and, you know, all that stuff. So, he nailed it, man.
We didn't bring that up with Daryl Taylor. He's going to play in 260s, but he's in his 240s. So he still has some weight to put on.
I guess.
But he's out there looking good.
All right. Well, good. I hope so. I mean, you draft a dude in the second, like, you hope he's going to be pretty good.
You hope he's going to play.
Yeah. Yeah, be a contributor. I don't care what weight he's at, as long as he plays well.
And it was kind of cool. He's out there with the rookies, even though he's not a rookie technically anymore.
Any extra reps he can get in such a bizarre year last year, I do feel sorry for almost every rookie that came into every league last year. I mean, just tough.
Oh, so this is the other thing about now. I think there's Seahawks fans struggling with this because the Seahawks are the only NFC West team. They might be even one of the few NFC teams to not have veterans at the voluntary minicamps or the OTAs. Mandatory minicamps coming up, so it sounds like they're going to be there for that. But for these voluntary OTAs, the Seahawks did not have veterans there. And this was a point of contention, at least on local radio.
They're bored on local radio. Who gives a catfish? Like, it's not up to... If the players feel like they can get through a season and do it well without being a voluntary OTAs, then all the better for them. And I found it hilarious that when this came out about which teams weren't going to participate, it was automatically the first team was the Seahawks, and then the second was the Broncos. You know, a couple of the Northwest teams. No, we got other things we can do in the summer out here. It's way better in the summer here. And I've got things to do. So, no, I won't be there for that.
Sounds like the veterans are doing the Zoom meetings. But in terms of the OTAs, right. I think it makes more sense to me to have the rookies getting more coaching because those are the guys who need it more.
Exactly. You only have so many reps in your body, man. You don't need to burn them all up. You know, at some voluntary mini camp. It's just ridiculous.
Now, if the Broncos and the Seahawks are the two last place teams in the NFL, we'll know that they screwed up. But I don't see that happening.
That seems super unlikely. Aaron Rodgers isn't going to let them lose more than what, like six games that year?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
The two top quarterbacks in the NFL.
I keep joking about it because I still think Jared genuinely believes they're getting him.
You got to keep that hope alive for him. And we know that he listens to the show every week.
Oh, yeah, for sure. He gives a catfish. He loves listening to me talk. That's for sure.
Well, you know what? Maybe some of our listeners are getting tired of hearing you talk too. What do we say we get on to do better and better at life?
All right, man. What you got for do better?
My do better this week is for, and I don't know if Ryan Dunleavy wrote the headline to this New York Post article. So if I can't give it to Ryan, I'm giving it to the New York Post in general. But the headline of this article is the intriguing Tim Tebow conspiracy theory floating around the NFL. And oh man, you put Tim Tebow and conspiracy theory in a headline, you can guarantee that I'm clicking on it.
Oh, absolutely. That was like brought to you by God.
And you can guess that because it's in the Do Better segment, I was disappointed.
Oh no.
Yeah. The article here says, and this is how it starts off. If future Hall of Famer Drew Brees can share snaps with Taysom Hill, surely Trevor Lawrence can make room for Tim Tebow. At least that's what some conspiracy theorists in the NFL are thinking when it comes to figuring out why Jaguars coached See, it tripped me up because I said Jaguars and I was thinking at the time, should I be saying Jaguars? And no.
Yeah,
I said it right.
You should be saying Jaguars.
Figuring out why Jaguars coach Urban Meyer signed Tebow to play tight end. And I can't say it for the writer because he references conspiracy theory in the opening of his article. And I'm thinking, okay, conspiracy theory. I love a good conspiracy. And so, yeah, did Urban Meyer's daughter get kidnapped and the only way to save her is to bring Tebow back into the league, and he's using the Tebow jersey sales as a way to pay off some Florida politician who has like a secret Bitcoin mining operation that's being used to send the funds to have her released? But then in the next paragraph, it says the actual reason. There are those in the league who think Urban Meyer is bringing Tebow in to play quarterback as that Taysom Hill role. ESPN's Diana Rossini reported on Get Up. Okay. This isn't a conspiracy. This is just what people think is how he's using him. This isn't a conspiracy at all.
Yeah. Where are the pig human hybrids? Where's the pedophilia rings? Where's the Eyes Wide Shut parties? Like where? Tim Tebow isn't like trafficking like exotic animals.
Yeah.
Like what? Where is the conspiracy here? You're right. This just sounds like a news story.
this is a news story masquerading as an actual conspiracy. So for Ryan Dunleavy of the New York Post, do better.
Yeah, that's a terrible conspiracy. It's like, man, like,
yeah, this is just how the Jaguars might use Tim Tebow.
Hey, I've got a conspiracy theory about convenience stores.
Yeah.
Most of them stock Coke.
Whoa.
And they have it there. They have it there so people can drink it.
But is that really why?
No. Bill Gates has microchipped all the Cokes.
There we go. That's that's what we came for.
Exactly.
I'm tired of people labeling like actual thinking with conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Now we're at the point where we can't tell the difference between, what a conspiracy theory is and just like a random fact. Like you look at a rock and be like, that's a rock. Nice conspiracy theory, man.
Stop saying conspiracy theory when you just mean maybe this could happen.
Right. All right. My do better this week. It almost borders to a conspiracy theory, really, but it's more to the supernatural, maybe.
Ooh.
I don't know.
Ooh.
But my do better this week is for my neighbor. And it's because just before we got on to do this podcast, Brandon, he came back from a big trip into the Pintler Mountains, which is a mountain range not far from here, and told me the most terrifying Bigfoot story I've ever heard in my freaking life.
Okay? I want to hear it. You must tell me.
Okay, so I'm going to start out. My neighbor is probably one of the last true mountain men badasses, right? Like, he'll just grab a tent and then, like, a wood stove he made out of tomato cans, and then in the middle of February, like, take that tarp in the little wood stove he made out of tomato cans, climb to the top of a hill in the middle of a snowstorm, and see if he can survive for, you know, two or three nights, just to see, right?
Has he been on the Naked and Afraid show yet?
No, but he would clean up on any of that stuff, okay, right? I mean, he mills his own lumber and then builds a house, right? This is who this guy is. So he's not one to, he lives in a wall tent at the top of our gulch, right? Like, he lives in the wilderness. So he's not one to just get, like, randomly spooked by stuff out in the woods. Like, that's not who this guy is. And he's one of the most truthful people I've ever met in my life. So I tend to believe this.
Uh-huh.
So him and two buddies, I'm going to tell the truncated version.
Should we do the extended version as a bonus?
I could read. He brought me a typed out version of the story because he just wanted to put it down on paper so he remembered everything, and I could read that. It's like three pages.
Okay,
but I don't know. Okay, maybe
truncated
maybe
version first. We can work out details on bonus content later.
So one of his male buddies, a female buddy, and him head out to this trailhead. I think it was Crab Lake up in the Pintlers. Anyways, road snowed in. There's still a bunch of snow up there. So they snowshoed and skied, and then intermittently between having to hike, get to this trailhead, right? Trailhead is, I don't know, probably a parking area that's a quarter to half of a football field in size that's just kind of open, and they camp in one corner of it. So, like, late afternoon, early evening, they start hearing this weird noise out just maybe 30 feet out in the trees. And it was just like somebody taking a stick and banging a tree or knocking on a door. Just knock, knock. Hmm. Very rhythmic.
Yeah.
Knock, knock. And then 5 or 6 minutes would go by. Knock, knock.
Hmm.
That's weird. So this goes on for an hour or two. And they're all starting to make theirs. Ah, it's just a woodpecker. It's this, it's that, whatever. I don't know, but whatever. Then, so that was like to the east side of them. So then it goes knock, knock. And then to the southeast of them. So like kind of at a little different angle. Knock, knock.
Oh.
Like, that's weird. This goes on for about another 30 to 45 minutes. And then knock, knock to the south. Knock, knock to the southeast, knock, knock to the north.
Whoa.
Like a little further up into the trees.
Uh-huh. And could they tell how close this was?
Yeah, it was just like, so it's a heavily wooded area, right? And they're in this parking lot. So they're like just back enough up into the trees that you can't really see what the hell it is.
Okay.
Right. And they're like, this is weird. It's getting later and later, right? Now, you know, it's getting a little closer to dusk. So knock, knock to the east, knock, knock to the southeast, knock, knock to the north, and then knock, knock to the west. Now it's surrounding them.
Uh-oh.
Right?
Uh-huh. Did they ever...
So this goes...
Did they ever knock themselves?
Yeah. Yeah. So Brandon would do it. No call and response or anything.
Okay.
You know, that sort of thing, right? So now he's like, this is weird. They're starting to get a little more spooky about it. Well, then right at the trailhead where the trail begins, it's like two trails kind of start and then converge a little ways back into the woods. So there's like this little island of trees right there at the trailhead. And the dogs are losing their crap over this stuff, right? Like doing circles and freaking out. And like the dogs are having a reaction he's never seen his dog have before. Mm. And again, his dog is also a mountain badass that fights mountain lions, right? So like, it's not like this is normal behavior for this dog. So knock, knock to the south, knock, knock southeast, knock, knock to the north, knock, knock to the west. And then from that group of trees towards the back, something just made a noise like that. Like a big, like a, almost like when a horse, like,
yeah,
you know,
I was going to ask you if that noise that you made, if that was more of a horse noise.
No, I don't know. I can't make the noise. I'm not a Bigfoot, right? So That was weird. And like, so that freaked him out. That was super loud. The dogs lose it. They go running over there and start barking. And so Brandon walks over there and he starts walking around this little island of trees. He's like, I looked up and down that thing. I looked all over the place. There was nothing in there. I wasn't going in there, but there was nothing in there, right? It was dense, but if there's something big in there, you should be able to see it. It's like, okay. Comes back. Knock, 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 knock. Oof. This happens like 10 or 15 times.
Whoa.
The same sequence of stuff, right? At this point, his other dude buddy, he's like, when I got here, I had a terrible feeling about this place. It was stone quiet. There's not a bird. There's not a chipmunk. There's not a bug. It's just dead silent. I haven't liked it since we got here. I say we pack up.
Yeah.
Lady friend was like, no, you know, I'm sure it's just a bear or whatever. It's fine. Like, I don't know. And Brandon's like, I could probably stay for the night, but you know, if you guys are feeling leaving, then fine. So then it all happens again. And then his buddy loses it. He's like, nope, we're going. He's like, okay, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll leave. Right. And it's now just getting dark. And then the same sequence happens again. Knock, 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 knock. Woof. Right.
Freaky.
Brandon looks over and he says about 12 feet up in the air before his headlamp, like sweeps around to like where this noise out in the brush that he heard was before his headlamp sweeps around. He sees two glowing red eyes, freaking huge, like the size of big ass tomatoes. Right. And like kind of a big ass, like humanoid-y kind of face. Right. And as fast as he sees it, it's gone. And he freaks out at that point and he grabs him by the back of the backpacks and just starts pushing him down the road. We're leaving now. We're not, you know, we're not doing anything. They're like, why? He's like, I'm not going to tell you. Like, why? He's like, I'm not going to tell you. So finally, after they get down the road a little ways, they can hear catfish out in the brush beside them, like mirroring them down the road.
Ooh,
right?
Freaky.
And so, they're like, tell us. And he's like, okay, saw these giant red glowing eyes and a big ass face was like 12 feet in the air, like I'm telling you. And they're like, oh my God. So now these things that are going next to them, the sounds are getting closer of them kind of barely rustling through the brush, but almost silent, right? But literally just keeping right up with them off the road.
Yeah.
And he looked over and there's red eyes on one side of him, red eyes on the catfishing other side. And now he's really starting to lose. I was like, you didn't torch a shot off? Like, to see, he's like, no, dude. He's like, the feeling was that they were just curious, but if you did something, it could turn real bad. Like, maybe they were hunting us. So then they go down the road a little bit further. They hear a howl from the top of a bluff just nearby. And then a corresponding one, like, past their truck. And then something, like, moved past them real quick when their backs were all turned to one side. And it smelled like a skunk.
Huh.
Like, but it was something big, like whooshed past them. And they whipped around and they couldn't see anything. And it smelled like a skunk. At that point, they're freaking out. They get back to the car. His buddy just like gets the hell out of there. And so now, for the rest of my life, every evening, I'm going to be looking around for a giant pair of red catfishing eyes out in the forest, staring back at me, just hovering there. Thanks a lot for that. Brandon, other Brandon, do better.
Well, this is how I know he's lying, because you said it was where now? What mountains?
The Pentler Mountains.
Yeah. Bigfoot doesn't live in the Pentlers.
You don't know that.
Everybody knows that Bigfoot is in the Big Belts.
No, in the Belt Mountains, that's the little people.
But they do the Bigfoot Festival there like every year.
Oh, maybe that. No, it's you said the Belt Mountains. It's the Pryor Mountains is where the little people are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which is another terrifying story. Look it up, people.
Terrifying mountain stories from Montana.
Here's the other thing that corroborates all this, right?
Okay.
Sort of. I have only had one experience that in the woods, and I spent a lot of time in the woods. Obviously, I live in the freaking woods. That I would say, I thought maybe I had a Bigfoot encounter. Uh-huh. Okay. So this was years and years and years ago, but it was in Granite Ghost Town right above Phillipsburg here. So in this area.
Yeah.
Okay. It was Thanksgiving, went out with the ex-wife to get a Christmas tree. I didn't have a saw. I didn't have an axe. So I brought my 10/22 and about 100 rounds of ammo. And and I shot the top off of a tree for our Christmas tree.
Uh-huh.
It's like the perfect top, right? So I shoot that off up at the ghost town. And it falls off with the last bullet. Boo! And it falls over. I'm like, yeah. So we're parked on this road and I'm dragging the top of this tree up to the car. And up on the hillside, just above the car, I hear out in the trees, just whoa, 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 up in the snow.
Yeah.
And it was definitely bipedal, dude. Like, there is no effing way that was a four-legged creature. I mean, I'd spend enough time with wildlife to know, like, that is not what that sounds like.
Right.
And there's no other car tracks up there. There hasn't been anybody up there for, like, a good week, right, since the snow. So I yell out, hello. It starts coming my direction faster. It's like, who are you? And at that point, I had this feeling come over me of just sheer terror. I don't know what it is. I don't know. It was bizarre.
It was a snowshoer who was pissed that you were shooting bullets in his direction to take down the top of a tree.
There's nobody up there, Brandon. Nobody lives up there. So I shoved the tree in the Jeep as fast as I could. I hauled ass out of there. And I've always told that story jokingly. Oh, yeah, you know, I ran into Bigfoot. But, like, seriously, like, this is in the same region.
Yeah. I almost bought a shirt when I was in Missoula recently that said it was Bigfoot hide-and-seek champion.
Oh, yeah, I love that shirt. I've seen that. Yeah.
I almost got it.
I think I bookmarked it on Instagram or something. I was going to buy it.
It's a good shirt. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's your Sam Squanch story for the week.
There it is. Sam Squanch. That's... Is that Trailer Park Boys?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The Sam Squanch, Ricky.
I think we've had this discussion before because I saw the guy who plays Bubbles was the bass player for a group called Sandbox.
That was like a Rush tribute band or something?
No, it wasn't. It was an actual band. They opened for the Bare Naked Ladies in Calgary when we saw them.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. You didn't go with us for that trip, I don't think.
I did not. That was one I missed out on.
Yeah. On to Better at Life.
All right. What you got?
My Better at Life this week is for the Pro Football Writers of America. And they made an outstanding decision when they selected their finalists for the Therese A. Paylor Emerging Writer Award. And one of the five finalists, Michael Sean Dugar of The Athletic. So I thought that was a smart move. And if the Pro Football Writers of America, I'm sure these are other fine people that he's nominated against, but if they don't pick.
I'm sure they are, but they're not Michael Sean, so they can go jump off a cliff.
And if he's not the one who's selected, then they're wrong. But
I'm burning it down if they don't select him.
But so, yes, maybe. See, I shouldn't even give this to the Pro Football Writers Association. I'm giving this Better at Life to Michael Sean Dugar of The Athletic. He is better at life than Skip Bayless.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Nailed it. I love it.
There we go.
All right.
But still, well, he should win.
If he doesn't, I'm seriously burning down something somewhere. Mm-hmm. That.
So what do we do this to in protest? Is there a Pro Football Writers flag?
No, but they all have to hang out somewhere. Let's just burn down their favorite bar.
Torch one of their garbage cans
or when they're all like together at, say, like the draft or whatever, don't they have like a place where you can go and get food, where all the media guys can go and get food?
That's we eat all the food before they get there and then
burn it down.
No, I feel like we don't burn anything.
I want to burn it down.
I feel like we have to do something that's traumatizing but not terrorism. And I feel like eating all the food out of the wherever the writers go to eat at some point in time, that would be significantly disturbing, but not terrorism.
I want a little column A, a little column B. I want both. One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter, Brandon.
Okay. We'll coordinate with Michael Sean to see what his appropriate level is if he doesn't win. And so hopefully it doesn't come to that.
Fire. All right, man. My Better at Life than Skip Bayless this week. It's for our honeybees.
Yeah.
We bought bees for this year. This is the first time I'm doing beekeeping. And It was interesting. I ordered them from the Spokane area. They drove them out to the Missoula area. And you just went out by this gas station to this warehouse at a certain time and then go and pick them up. And I'm thinking, okay, cool. Like, not a big deal. So it's at like 6. We show up at like 5:45.
Is this place on the, like, did you get black market honeybees?
No, no, they're on the level. They're on the level. Their web, their website's pristine. Come on now.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how you know. But anyways, we show up and, you know, 5 till, whatever, you know, pick up some bees, right? And there's a bunch of cars like parked like along the ditch on the road leading up to the building. And I'm like, man, like that weed store over there is super busy. Like, look at all these cars, like blah, 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 blah. And then until I started going past them to go around the corner and realizing that the cars then went around the corner and then all the way up to the building. The line to pick up bees was a half a mile long.
Wow.
That's how many people were showing up to pick up bees.
It's like a Chick-fil-A grand opening.
Yeah. Yeah, it was insane. And then I go and sitting there in the car and I was like, oh, wonder if they take card. And I look up the email and they're like, nope, cash or check. I was like, okay, I'm going to go to the ATM. So I go to the ATM. Gal in the gas station is like, what is going on? I'm like, people are picking up bees. And she's like, bees, buzz, buzz, bees. I'm like, yeah, like, you know, bees are cool. Like, you know, and she's like, yeah, okay, whatever, freak shows. So then I leave and I'm seeing more cars pile in and one or two cars coming out. And like one of the cars, like there's a hole on bee suit in the passenger seat next to the guy, just like empty.
Uh-huh.
You know, just, nobody was in it. And I'm like, damn, this he's really into this bee thing, you know? And then I see another like SUV drive by and they both have their bee hoods on, you know, as they drive by. And I'm like,
uh-oh,
man, these guys are nerds, dude. These bee nerds. What the hell's going on? So then I go and I look further down the email and I'm like, they're like, oh, please bring a pickup because though they're sealed, quote unquote, bees do get out. And I'm still sitting there thinking, I'm going to put a box full of bees in the back of the Jeep and drive an hour and a half down the highway. I'm literally going to end up doing the Chris Farley scene from Tommy Boy about, you know, 45 minutes down the road. So I was like, nope, not doing that. We'll go back to Peaburg, get the truck and meet him in Hamilton the next day at like 6 a.m. Went there, no line, got my bees immediately. But anyways, it got cold as hell. Like it got really cold here, like wintertime cold, 2-3 weeks right after I got them. And they're like, you can't put them in their new home until it's like 60 degrees.
Oh.
And so they had to live in this cardboard box up here in the gulch when it was getting down to like 12 degrees, which is way colder than they're used to at this point. Right.
Right.
Like they're not ready for this. I was like, oh, just hang in there, little ladies, like just do it for me and then we'll be good. And they did. They survived the like 2 feet of snow, really cold temperatures for about 3 weeks and finally got them moved into their new box. And they are absolutely happy, buzzing all around the place, picking pollen up all over the place. And it is an absolute ball to sit down there and just watch them do their thing. It's freaking fascinating.
Yeah.
It's like watching a spaceport from the future, right? Like ships coming in and ships coming out and they like launch out of there like really fast all the time. It's cool. And when I did transfer them to the new box, not one sting. They're all super chill. They're just the best bees in the world. And they survived, you know, a really tough start out here in the gulch. And so to my bees, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Well, you got your hummingbird named and now you just have to work on naming all your bees.
Yeah, I don't think so. No, it's I just call them ladies because all the worker bees are ladies.
Well, so female names.
Sure. I mean, or I can just go blanket statement and, you know, save myself a lot of effort.
Yeah, ladies. I don't know. I want you to have individual names next time.
They only live 90 days before the next batch comes.
Oh, so you
up.
Don't want to get attached?
That's exactly right. It's like naming your cow before, you know.
You just go like on Simpsons. You name, you know, the cat Snowball and then Snowball 2.
Yeah, yeah.
You cycle exactly. Through the names.
Yeah, you could. You could. I mean, or I could just go with ladies, which I think is what I'm going to do.
All right, fine then.
Unless you want to come up with 10,000 lady names.
I could do it.
I didn't say you couldn't. I just said if you wanted to.
This is why I passed off the job to you.
Yeah, well, I this, if this was a Mission Impossible envelope, and I say, you know, if you want to accept this mission, open the thing, right? I can, what is the phrase they use on Mission Impossible?
It's an old show, dude.
Here's your mission. If you choose to accept it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't accept it.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.